Blog Talk Radio
presents a
Everybody, welcome to Applause Radio Show. I'm Joanne Barton, and we've got a great show for you tonight. Oh, Mr. Mark Barron, we've been trying to connect for months, and I apologize. We're finally getting this going. Can't wait to talk to him tonight. I am an avid lottery player, and I'm very, very interested in talking to him about his new movie, Mega Balls. So let's just say thank you. Tonight, our show is sponsored by Michael's Arts and Crafts. Thank you to them for being a sponsor. And on the phone with me is Mr. Mark Barron. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Joanne. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And I can't believe we finally made this happen.
It was inevitable.
Oh, la, 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 la. Indubitably, it was inevitable. Well, man, you've got some career there. I feel like I'm speaking to Vienna royalty, to be quite honest.
Well, almost. My grandfather's uncle was knighted by the Emperor of Austria, but unfortunately, the knighted person's son died, so the title didn't get handled down, but we're all here.
Right. Man, you've got your family history is something. Have you ever done your family tree? What's that, Ancestry.com or whatever it is?
I have my family tree. I've been working on a biography on my grandfather for years.
Nice.
And in the process discovered a whole family that my mother thought died in the war.
Wow.
And they have become good friends, and I visit them every couple of years when I can.
What kind of stories did you hear about Hedy Lamarr in your family?
My mother just said that, you know, she went to school with her in high school. And my mother was supposed to audition for Hedy's movie, The Ecstasy, the first film. But my grandfather wouldn't let my mother audition because of the nudity. And my mother used to always joke my grandfather because he was a sculptor and a lot of his work were nudes, but he was against her doing the film.
Well,
and my joke was, if my mother got the job, my name might have been Mark Lamarr.
That's true. Well, sure, he wouldn't have cared if it was any other woman. It was his wife, so he didn't want to see her body up there, so, you know. But now also, I'm very, very interested in knowing about your mentor, if you want to say that, mentorship with Gene Kelly's brother, Fred.
Yeah, I met him in college. He was a lot of fun. I was a musical theater major with the emphasis on performance and directing, and took Fred's class, and the two of us just clicked. We became good friends for years. And then it was Fred who eventually brought me into the Lambs, which is a very old theater organization that I'm now the head of.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, too. I wanted to ask you about the Lambs, too. What does that stand for, the Lambs? Is it an acronym for anything or just the Lambs?
No. It was originally founded in London in 1868, and there were a group of people in theater who used to go round to the home of Charles and Mary Lamb for dinner. Charles Lamb was a writer, a playwright. But he and his sister were best known for their annotations on Shakespeare that Shakespearean actors still study today. And about 30 years after they died in 1868, bunch of actors decided to form a supper club, and they named it after Charles and Mary, the Lambs.
Very interesting. See, now I had no idea. That's why I'm like, is it an acronym for something? I'm trying to figure it out, and I couldn't because it falls in line with the act. It's an actors fund as like I saw it on your IMBD. It said you raise money for what was it called? The Actors Equity Fund? No.
Well, the Lambs is two parts. There is the club part. And then it is also a foundation. It was members of the Lambs over the years had left their footprint in the world of theater and film. It was member of the Lambs who founded the Actors Fund, Actors Equity, ASCAP, United Artists, Paramount Pictures. There were Lambs involved in the founding of Screen Actors Guild of AFTRA.
Wow.
And even more recently, the merger of SAG and AFTRA into one union. There were three Lambs involved in that. Lerner and Lowe met at the Lambs Club, and Fred Lowe left the Lambs Foundation, a piece of Brigadoon. And the Lambs Foundation supports nonprofit theater and education in the arts. And we always say my favorite part of being the president of the foundation and the Lambs is every year I got to write thousands of dollars of checks to various organizations that were able to help.
Nice. Must have felt good to write those out. Now, during COVID, what was the presence of Lambs, or was there none because there's nothing going on?
Well, we don't know the building we're in, but the space that we have within the building was available for some use. For example, during the pandemic, my club historian has been doing a lot of work on projects that we've been working on, such as the restoration of some of the artwork and doing research. But what we did, we quickly took all our activities online in the virtual world, where
we did
a lot of meetings, a lot of interviews with famous people. We were able to act with people we couldn't do normally, and now we're slowly getting back to opening up again.
Right, cool. I know we're hoping. I'm knocking on wood that things start to open up. So I got to go back to Fred Kelly. Pardon me. Why did Fred want to be the teacher and Gene want to be the star? Do you know?
Well, Fred actually taught Gene how to dance.
Right. That's why I'm curious.
They did one film together. There's a famous number that they call Swimming with Women, a dance routine. But from what I recall, Fred said he wasn't so thrilled about life in Hollywood. He felt he was a teacher, he was a choreographer, he was an early television director, and he stayed here in New Jersey where, they were originally, the Kelly family came from Pittsburgh, but he enjoyed his life here, and that was that. He just felt that was the world he liked.
Right, because I was curious, because if Fred is the one that taught Gene how to dance, so he had to be better to some degree, you know, but I guess Gene had the charisma and the want and to do it, Fred, so.
The whole family's musical. They originally, I think there were five Kelly brothers and sisters as an act when they were kids. And since then, I think Gene's daughter is a costume designer in film. Fred's son, Mike, was an assistant director of what they call a stage manager television. His daughter, Colleen, teaches dance, and she's got a foundation for tap dance. So the family, their families have stayed in the arts.
Wow. Very interesting. I mean, Gene was phenomenal and a major classic. So it's so sad we're losing so many of our favorite celebrities, actors, actresses. It's just crazy how it's happening all at once, it seems, anyway, to me. But now you have some background here. Actor, singer, screenwriter, director. I was chiding you as a producer, but wouldn't that be somewhat producer-director? I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's a hyphenate. I mean,
Right.
You know, today,
right.
Today you have to do a little bit of everything. It was Fred who started me on directing. He said, you've got to do more, you know, be prepared to do everything.
Right.
I was originally geared in musical theater. I was married to someone at that time when I was young who didn't like the idea of me traveling.
Mm.
So I started seeing what I could do within local work.
Mm.
And because I had some directing training, when I got into a film set and learned what a stand-in was, I went, I'd rather be there than do extra work. And I quickly became very good at it and in demand because I knew that how directors wanted to work. So, because as a stand-in, you often work a lot with the director.
Right.
And
I'm sorry. I was going to ask you to explain what a stand-in is for everybody. I know
sure.
what it is because of prior guests, but maybe people don't know because you were a stand-in for some major stars, Matthew Broderick,
yeah.
Sean Penn, and I can only imagine. Oh, and you worked with Dustin Hoffman as well, right?
Well, for those listening, when they shoot a film, generally what will happen is the director will rehearse the scene with the actual actors, and then when everybody's kind of happy, the actors will go off and they'll go through hair, makeup, and wardrobe while the rest of the crew gets busy setting up the lights, setting up the camera, rehearsing the camera, and they need actors on hand. So there are actors who are hired because they're about the same height and weight. Sometimes
right.
if the hair doesn't match, it'll be dyed and cut. Then the actors, then the stand-ins, what they're called, they will do the rehearsals, and then when the director's happy that everything's ready, those actors will step back in and they'll shoot the sequence. That's generally how it works, but I did one film with Woody Allen for 4 months. It was the one where I doubled for Sean Penn, where Woody worked the opposite. He would work all the physical stuff out with me first, then he would bring Sean in and rehearse him and then shoot it. So each director's different. I did two films with Matthew Broderick. What I call my master class in film was the first time I worked with Matthew Broderick. But when I got to the set, there was Sean Connery and Dustin Hoffman and Sid Lumet, the director. And from the day one, it was just a great set to work on. Everybody was great to work with. Sidney Lumet was constantly explaining shots. I was getting like a master class in directing. Dustin Hoffman, one of the funniest people I met on set at that time, and he was giving me acting lessons in between.
Wow.
And Sean Connery was talking about how he was supposed to be musical theater.
Wow.
One day I was off in the corner writing. We were shooting over the holidays, and I took the poem A Night Before Christmas and rewrote it. So it became A Night Before Christmas all through the set. No one was stirring, not even Lumet. And Matthew Broderick grabs it from my hands, and he comes back about 10 minutes later with Dustin Hoffman. And the two of them now for the rest of the film for a week kept telling me I need to start writing. I need to write and create my own work. So that's what planted the seed. I've kept in touch with Matthew Broderick over the years. He's a good guy, sweet guy. In fact, he did a luncheon for us at the Lambs about 5 years ago where we raised money to buy some new pianos. He was a guest.
Nice. Now, I just wanted to ask you, going back to the stand-in. I mean, how do you get that kind of job? What's the want ad when you're looking through show business or backstage? Is it looking for 6 foot whatever, dark hair? Does it say to match Matthew Broderick or no? Or
well,
no specific actor? I mean, what kind of ad do they put out for a stand-in like that?
Here in New York, the people that hire the stand-ins are also the people that hire extras. So you first start doing is when you are in your building your relationships and contacting the casting directors, you let them know you are interested in doing stand-in work, and then you have to tell them your height, weight, and your photo will show your hair color. Often, if you've never done it, they will hire you for a 1 or 2 day stand-in role where it might not be one of the lead actors. And then once they get to know and get feedback, then you start getting called. And so you get to build a reputation. And for many years, that was what I was getting called for all the time, which was nice but frustrating because then you're no longer thought of as an actor. You're the stand-in.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. It's your show.
Well, sometimes when you're lucky with a stand-in, if you really get along with the actor, sometimes the actors then want you in their contract. Mm. So when that happens, you get substantially more money, and
right.
then you're going to work all along. Matthew Broderick at that time wanted me in his contract, and it didn't happen for whatever reason. But,
mm-hmm.
for example, on the film we did together, Dustin Hoffman had a stand-in. She was a female.
Hmm.
And he got to know her when they were doing Tootsie, because they shot the female portions first, and then they went
right.
back when he was not in that. And when they brought a man in one day, he said, "What happened to the other stand-in? I want her."
Mm.
And then when they brought her back, and then he trusted her, he liked her, and he put her in a contract, and she did numerous films that way.
Wow, that's cool. Well, the reason I was asking so much about that, because you've got, again, singer, actor, screenwriting, director. I mean, what was your goal when you were starting in the industry? What did you really want to be? I mean, a serious actor?
Because it sounds like
writing came later.
I wanted to be employed.
Don't we all?
And you know, it's there are two schools of thought. You know, I've heard some people say that when you're in this business, you need to focus on one spectrum of work. You are an actor. You are a musical theater actor. You're a commercial actor. You're a voiceover actor. Others say the more things you can do, the more opportunities you have for employment. So
That's true.
Whichever way you want your career.
Right.
Again, I started focused on musical theater, but because I was being the good husband, it took me into stand-in work, which really prepares you more as a director than it does an actor. And from the stand-in work is when I started writing. Also, I was in the Navy for a while, you know, back when we still had tall ships with sails.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned computer skills, so when I came out of the Navy, I owned a computer. Well, most people even, you know about it. My joke was when Steve Jobs was building them in his garage, I was buying them.
Right.
And when word got out to people I knew saying, "You had a computer, hey, would you type my script so this way I can always go back and work on it without a retyping the whole thing?"
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing that, and then when I started helping people with their scripts or typing them into the computer, I would say, "You know, you got a problem here. You have character dialogue on page 78, but you killed the character on page 45.
Hmm.
And so I started becoming kind of a script doctor for some people.
Right,
and
right.
then I started co-writing with some people and then eventually writing with my own.
So like I said, writing really wasn't your main love at the time when you started. It just kind of fell in your lap per se, and something that was you were really good at and just kept going, right? And so now,
yeah, in back in high school when I belonged to the theater club, I mean we as a group we wrote our own skits, so we were writing it back then.
Right.
Yeah, and even today when you watch a lot of shows, people realize, especially in the variety television, how many actors are also the writers.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I miss variety TV. Remember the variety specials? I miss them so much. They
sure.
were so corny, but they were so good, you know?
Even now, I look at like Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the old 70s variety shows. Remember those?
Yeah. But a lot of the people on Saturday Night Live, they were comedians that were hired, and they also wrote or were participated in the writing of the scenes.
Right. Well, yeah, I think they all write a lot, right? I mean, they're all pretty much
right.
On the staff, the writing staff. So,
what I like to do instead of saying, "Oh, I'm an actor-writer-blah-blah-blah," I just say I'm a storyteller, because they're all aspects of telling stories.
Right. That's true. Now, which is I hate asking this because it's such a stupid question. Which do you love more? Which, if you could only keep one and the rest were to go away tomorrow and you could only have one of these talents, which one would you prefer to have?
It's a tough question. It's like saying, which one of your fingers do you want to keep?
I know. I told you it was a stupid question.
It's because, And a lot of people, you know, I think will get this. It's like we all have this imagination, and so when you dream at night, you're writing and acting in your own stories in a way. I guess the combination of writing, directing must be the way I'm going. We shall see, because then you are the person who's you've created the story, and now you're going to convert what you have on screen, I mean, what you have on page, until now you have it on screen, so you have control that way. But it depends, you know. And the tough thing is sometimes, too, you get hired as an actor to work on something, and you kind of want to say, hey, there's a problem with the script here, but you don't.
Right.
Again, you know, to me, the whole goal for all of us in this industry is to survive. And, you know, I'd rather say, okay, I'm a writer this week, and the next year I'm doing this, rather than, hey, I got to go work and, you know, be a waiter tonight.
Right, exactly.
And the advantage with writing is you can do it at home by yourself, where acting, you really need to have an audience.
Right. Well, me personally, I feel like you love the writing more. I mean, you started Oraloro. I mean, so that right there says this is what I'm doing. So, but like you said, whatever is in the moment, that's what happens, right? So if it could be an acting job,
I have a business partner, Joe Cirillo. He was a retired cop who, through a chain of events while he was still a cop, wound up getting a job on The Godfather, and then he retired.
You know, he looked familiar to me, Mark. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but Joe look familiar to me. Yeah,
but he's done a lot of TV work. He's had a wonderful life. He just has his memoirs were just published. They're on Amazon.
Oh, cool.
I think it's called An Offer I Couldn't Refuse. He was as a cop. His duty was at that time was right near Mike Nichols' office, and he got to know Mike Nichols. And Mike said to Joe, "You ought to be an actor. Call these people." Joe gets his job on The Godfather. He retires as a policeman, New York cop, after 20 years, and now he runs a security firm that specializes in celebrities and movie sets. And he gets to know other people, and he gets other jobs. And he was a Kojak. You remember the old TV series?
Oh, I love Kojak.
Joe became their technical advisor, and for a year he was the right hand man to Telly Savalas.
Yeah,
And he and I met on the film set. We were, you know, and hanging out, and we were talking. We both had some interest in writing, and we eventually became friends, and then eventually we became business partners. We originally called the company Blue Shirt Productions because that's what the gangs used to call police. And we had a police story called Blue Shirts. And we had a third partner who owned a small studio, but he wound up selling the real estate. And Joe and I reformed our company as Oraloro, which is bad Spanish for golden parrot. And we between us, we either write together or we look over each other's shoulder in writing. A few of our pieces are another writer involved. For example, there was a kind of a slasher film that Joe wrote with somebody years ago. And recently I came in on it and we did a major rewrite it. And now we're trying to sell that one. So we, you know, it's wherever the story takes us is how we work.
Right. And Oraloro, do you accept unsolicited material, screenplays, or no?
No, because we're still struggling to get our own projects made.
Right.
You know, the toughest thing is to get started is get that first film or two produced because it's not easy to raise money.
Well, Megaball sounds like it's right up my alley. I want to talk about that. So talk to
sure.
And I first of all, anybody who saw the promo other than Mark, I pulled it back so fast. Last night on Saturday was the Powerball drawing. I played the lottery. So I wanted to say that, you know, you have this new movie out, Mega Balls, and I wrote Powerball, and I was like, oh, my God, you never saw somebody sink into a chair so bad. Oh, my God.
Well,
I was so embarrassed. I apologize.
to be clear, we haven't made Mega Balls yet. We're
right.
in the process of developing. But what happens,
right.
see, now that ties into our Joe and I having our office. We were having a meeting. We were doing some development. We almost had a $20 million deal to make three films.
Wow.
And the provision was that it needed to be bonded by Lloyd's of London. And our hearing date with Lloyd's of London was on the September 11th. So the deal never happened. But one day I was going down to the office, which was in Chelsea, and I live up
mm-hmm.
by Lincoln Center.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how Mega Balls came about. I was getting on the subway, and there is a sign that the Mega Millions was $120 million,
mm-hmm.
which back then was huge.
Right.
And
I was going to say, that's chump change now.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know what got me thinking of that, but on the subway trip, which was all of maybe 12 minutes long, I just got this idea of this story,
mm.
and I wrote down some notes, and when I got to the office, I went over the outline with Joe, and I said, you know, I have this idea. Why don't we make it as a short film while we're trying to pull together the feature-length projects? And he said, well, go ahead and write it. We'll see what happens. And then I made a bunch of notes and never got back to it. And then now we fast forward a couple of years, and my mother took ill. She was living in Florida. So
mm-hmm.
I was going back and forth from New York to Florida like every other week for a couple of days.
Mm.
And while I was down there, I said, you know, I got to do something to keep myself from getting too depressed and dealing with ultimately was my mother's death.
Yeah.
And watching Matlock, it was just not cutting it. So I pulled out my laptop and said, let me start working on, you know, this short script. And I came up with the title Mega Balls by combining Mega Millions and Powerball.
Mm-hmm.
But when you put them together, Mega Balls sounds like it's funny.
Well, you know,
and
what? I'm getting that it's funny, that it's definitely
yep.
funny based on the description.
And I wrote it. Within a week, I wrote 80 pages. And I said, okay, this clearly is not a short film.
No, it's and flowing. Go with it.
Yeah. I finished the first draft. I brought it back to my partner, Joe. I said, what do you think? And he read it, and he said he really liked it. You know, let's work on it. And ultimately, I made changes. And then what I did as part of my writing process to get objective ideas, I submitted it to a few festivals because some of these screenplay festivals give you feedback as part of the fee.
Right.
And the two that I got, the feedback was very positive, and they pointed out areas that needed work on. And I was still really getting the hang of screenwriting, but the feedback was super helpful.
Mm.
I went through the changes, again, got it to Joe. He really liked where we were going with it, put it in a few more festivals, and all of a sudden we just keep hitting festival wins.
I know. I saw 30 festivals here. That's I was like, well,
30,
wait, if it's not
30,
out yet,
yeah.
How did you get these 30 festival awards?
So we decided to shift gears and make that our first effort to produce because it was written in a way that we could bring the budget down.
Yeah.
We have a good friend of ours who's been supporting our work for a long time, John Bruno, JB. Hey, if you're listening, JB. And and JB knows how to do budgets and everything. And we gave it to him and said, you know, how low of a budget can we shoot?
Right.
And JB said, I really like the script. He said, I could probably squeeze it down to $500,000, but I think you need to go a little higher.
Mm.
And so we wound up our first effort to make it happen at $900,000. The hard thing about getting a film in today is you need money up front. You need to hire lawyers to do things. But Joe had a family friend who was a lawyer who handed films. He gave it to one of his lawyers, and we did the first legal work to set up. We could start raising money. And we started raising a little bit money. But then the government changed the rules about how you raise money for films, and we had to see if that worked or for us or not. And we wound up
right.
now needing to get a different lawyer. And he went over everything. He really liked the script and the schedule and everything. But he said the budget was too low, not so much that we couldn't shoot it for that, but in order to have what they call the insurance that they use to make sure your film gets finished,
right.
That we needed to raise the budget to a certain level. So we brought it back to JB. JB worked on it some more, and now we got to the budget of really of $1.9 million. So we rounded it off to $2 million. We relaunched the entire project. We went with our lawyer to the Toronto Film Festival. We got a lot of chat with people. People love the name. They love the title, Mega Balls, the tagline, because you never know when your number's up. And the imagery and everything was really working, but we weren't connecting. And then the lawyer said, come with me to Sundance, because he goes to these festivals. And we went to Sundance, where we entered it in a pitch contest, and we tied for first place. Ultimately, we were given second place, which was a small money prize. But and again, though, we weren't getting anywhere. But up there, we met a couple that ran a reputable low-budget distribution company. We're invited to their gorgeous home up on the mountainside, and their recommendation was raise the budget higher, because they felt that a comedy, their sweet spot for them as a distributor was budgets between $3 to $5 million. So now we have to go back with the lawyer, back with JB, change everything again, and now we've got this budget range of $3 to $5 million. $3 million is really the goal. But, you know, along the way, things happened. There was a six-month period. Joe's house burned down.
Oh, Jesus.
And thank God they went herp, and he and his son lived in a hotel for 6 months, and we got back into his house. And then I got a horrible case of Bell's palsy, where I was out of whack for like 4 months. And then we started again, and another time we had this one investor. We thought this guy was going to put up all the money because we have a lot of good tax incentives. And then this guy had an accident. We have to start all over again. And then the pandemic. Oh. So we you know, we keep giving it. You know, raising the money is a tough one. We've got we've got Vinnie Pastore, one of the actors of The Sopranos. He's already on board to play a good part.
Cool.
And ideally, I won't mention the actor we want for the lead, but you know, we'll see. Mm-hmm. But then the pandemic hit. And
but you're going to start filming again in the summer, I believe, right?
Well, what happened for me was I got hit with COVID early on. So I was pretty much out of commission for a couple of months. And what I started doing when I was feeling better, because everything was shut down, filming shut down, we couldn't estimate what it's going to cost to safely shoot under the new rules. I started attending a lot of online events for producing and networking. And by accident, one night this producer gets on and he's calling in from Vienna. And so we started chatting about, I mentioned my family history. We started talking about projects we were working on. And then he said, you know, I got this script that I wrote a very, very long time ago based on a play that I directed at the Lambs. And the story is set during a film festival, so it could be anywhere. So he asked to read the script, and I warned him, I haven't looked at it in years. My skills are better. He read the script. He really liked it. He said, do you want to continue working on it? Because he was interested.
Right.
I said, yeah, you know, we're all stuck at home. What could I do?
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a good 6 weeks of doing a top-to-bottom rewrite on the script and setting it in Vienna. And it got to the point where he finally said, that's it. I want to do this movie, and you direct it.
Cool.
So suddenly Mega Balls goes on the
then.
Shelf.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this one called Come Back in Vienna, and it's a romantic comedy, and it will be an Austrian film, not an American film shot in Austria, but it'll be an Austrian film in English.
Oh, really? Cool. So all Austrian background and everything, but they'll be speaking English. Cool. Wow.
Well, the main characters, it's a small lead roles. There are six lead roles. They all speak English, but some of the local roles, like the hotel clerk or the waiters, they'll speak in German. But it's written a way that, you know, the person will understand the waiter just to ask the actor what they want and things like that.
Right, right.
And it's shot the storyline takes place during the big Vienna Film Festival, which is known as the Viennale. And people there are reading the script, and they're all really excited because they don't get to see many romantic comedies coming out of Austria.
Right, right. Well, back to getting the budget, it sounds like when you do get the budget, it goes to everything but the movie. It goes to the lawyers, the insurance. I mean, geez, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, that's what we call the development cost. That's the money you just have to spend up front. So now you can, because a lot of people don't realize that legally you just cannot start taking ads out on Facebook and say, hey, I'm looking for investors.
Right. What about GoFundMe? I mean, is that, I think they do movies on there, don't they? GoFundMe? Well, I don't know.
Well, what has changed? That was one of the changes that occurred years ago because what used to be on things like Indiegogo and Kickstarter were the two at the time, where people weren't really giving you an investment. They were pre-buying. So you would run a campaign when you said, well, if you give me $50, you get a copy of the movie. And if you give me $500, you get a copy of the signed script. And you had all these things. And that would work up to a certain point. But in order to really raise a large amount of money on that, you needed to have a very wide social network. And then you still needed money because if one of the perks was a T-shirt, well, you had to buy and ship the T-shirt. Now it's now the government allows you also to do bona fide investors because now you can, as long as you provide certain documentation. And a certain documentation could involve a lawyer. So the work that we have allows me to do an investor under anything. So, example, I can actually say right now, live on the air, hey, if you want to invest in my movie, contact me, because I have the legal structure in place that allows me to do that.
Right, right.
And then what the lawyers also, this particular lawyer advised us is on how to make use of the various tax incentives that will – lower the risk for an investor.
Right.
So, for example, there is one called Section 181, which allows an investor to fully write off their investment the day I start the movie. And then the second tax deal is here in New York State. There is a rebate of about 25% of certain expenses. That money goes right back to the investors when we get it from the state. And then the third one is that when the money comes in from the movie, the investors can get a reduction in the taxes based on that income. So overall, that can reduce almost 50% of the risk.
Wow.
But you've got to find the investors.
Right, right. Well, folks, if you think it's easy to make a movie, it's not. That's what it sounds like to me.
and it sounds like you are
well-versed in what you need to know.
My favorite image is if you imagine your living room with 100 wedding rings suspended from the ceiling on the finest of threads, and you have one dart and one throw to get it through all those rings. That's what it takes the whole movie together, at least in the beginning. And eventually, you know, once you get a few movies together, it makes it easier. And that's why we shifted now to the Vienna film a little bit, because Austria does have a certain amount of government grants that could produce up to 50% of the cost of filming. And then now you have half the money, it becomes easier to raise the other half.
Right,
and also
right.
on the Austrian film, my producer there, he has certain connections to some famous Austrians that we can hopefully get to do some cameos, like Wolfgang Puck.
Oh,
and
wow.
there's two other major actors, and he said these people will help because they want to help the Austrian film industry.
Mm.
And what happened last year is I actually gained dual citizenship with Austria, so I'm considered from the point of the view of the grants as an Austrian. So the only non-Austrians that will be involved in that film will be my business partner Joe, and the two lead actors.
Cool. I have to ask you this. You could be killing three birds with one stone to save some money, too. Do you do this often? You are a singer. You are an actor and director. So do you put yourself in your movies and use your own music to help get you out there as what you want to be, obviously, but to cut costs as well?
Well, in these two films, in the Come Back to Vienna and Mega Balls, I'm giving myself a small cameo type of role because I'm going to be focusing on the directing part of it.
Right.
And I don't want to, it's a turnoff for some people of suddenly like it's written by, directed by, starring by, that, so you say, look, I've got to get it together. And also both of you do need to have a certain level of known actors to help sell the film.
Right.
I don't write music, so that doesn't help. But like in Comeback Vienna, the lead female character has a lot of my family history. Mm. And we even have a shot that will take place in front of one of the statues my grandfather made in Vienna, which is part of a story.
Wow. And,
then what I also do is I play the lottery.
Well, if you need somebody to play the lottery, I'm a natural, so.
I had to do a lot of research about the lottery and the odds and how I could visualize the odds to show you how great the odds are of winning. And then some of them I came up with were funny enough, we added them in the script. For example, you have a better chance of being killed by a vending machine than you do of winning the lottery.
Yeah, I can attest to that.
And we did, for Mega Balls, we did two readings here in New York. Jeez, I can't believe how fast this time is going, but we did two readings here in New York. We did one at the Lambs Club, and then we did one about 10 weeks later at the Players Club, which is another actors club like the Lambs.
Hmm.
And when we did it at the Lambs, one of the people came was Mike Reese. Mike has been one of the writers of The Simpsons for over 30 years.
Oh, wow.
And he and his wife, they're really nice people, and he's so funny. And he came up to me afterwards. It turned out he's also a bit of a math geek, and he got all my math jokes. He wanted to know when did I study advanced math, and I said, when I wrote the script. And he gave me a wonderful little quote that we could use to help promote it. There's a lot of jokes in both of them. I love when you write the main story and then start building in levels of jokes that you wonder, will people see these, keeping a list, what I call it, Easter eggs.
Right.
For example, in Mega Balls, there's a running joke about spam. Now, we all know spam is, junk email, but it's also a double reference to spam the lunch meat.
The spam, yeah. Hmm.
Go ahead. In the Vienna film, one of the hidden jokes is because a lot of it takes place in a hotel and during a film festival, that whenever there's a character, whether it's a predominant extra or a small role where they would have a name tag, the name tags are jokes.
Hmm.
For example, in the first scene, we see this kind of clumsy bellhop. And his name tag is H. Gruber, which was the name of the German terrorist in Die Hard.
Oh, yeah. Hmm.
So there's a lot of hidden references like that.
Yes, yes, yes. Now, do you find yourself to be more of a comedic writer or drama? I mean, or do
I
really know whatever the story is?
I prefer comedy and romantic comedy, yes.
Yeah.
The one that I came in later on as a third person was kind of a slasher killer, and I fixed some structural stuff, and I said, we got to get a couple little lighthearted moments in there. But that's really not my genre. I prefer comedy, romantic comedy.
That's what I prefer to watch, believe it or not.
I think we all need that right now. We need some laughter.
Oh, God. Yes, absolutely. I think Joe is in Mega Ball, yeah? Mega Balls.
What do you mean he's in it?
I thought he starring in it too? Joe has a role, no?
No, we haven't made the film, but yeah, there's a cameo for Joe, yes.
Right, he'll be in it.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. Joe's gonna be in it. Yeah,
And we are the co-producers. He won't have a on-screen role in the Austrian film.
Oh, okay. So cool.
He'll be acting as a co-producer on that.
Right. So now what is this, May? Are you on a break for the summer, or are you working? What writing? What are you guys doing right now? Are you working on Vienna?
We're working on really both films because they tend to go hand in hand, but the focus is on Vienna. Tomorrow morning, I have a Zoom call with my producer in Vienna. Next week, we have a Zoom call to Vienna, where the possible cinematographer is going to come on board. The cinematographer, it's actually two guys that work together, and they were part of the Oscar-winning Austrian film called The Counterfeiters. So we're excited to have them.
Nice.
We're working on trying to pull together some of the information needed for the Vienna project, because there is one person we're going to go to who is super, super wealthy, and there is a personal connection to Joe that we'll see if this person might be interested in coming up with some or all the financing. And if this person is, then we could feasibly start shooting the Vienna project by Labor Day weekend. Otherwise, if we have to wait for the grants to kick in, it pushes us until next spring. We're in the middle of May, so in the next 6 to 8 weeks, I do hope to make a trip to Vienna, visit my cousins there.
Nice.
The producer who produced this, there's a documentary coming out about Wolfgang Puck. It's going to be premiering in Tribeca Film Festival. And my film producer there was a producer of that. And they're trying to set up a screening for Wolfgang and his family in Vienna. So we're going to see how that times out, if I should go for that. If not, then I'll wait later until July and spend 3 weeks there with the family and then do some meetings with people there about, you know, pulling the project together. I know Vienna locations pretty well, so we don't need to do that, but we are going to walk around and scout and introduce ourselves, like finding, you know, the right hotel and getting them on board.
Right. Well, I hope you get to go to the one for Wolfgang Puck and get to do everything else too. That'd be great. And you could do all those at once and enjoy yourself too. I mean, I'm sure a vacation is in need for you, right? Like everybody else.
Yeah,
you know.
I haven't had one in 4 years.
Yeah, me too. It's been a couple of years myself. And, I forgot. Mark, I lost my train of thought. There was something I was going to ask you, and I always – oh, have you guys thought about reaching out to Arnold? He might be interested in working on
– He is one of the four scripted cameo roles.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I just don't want people to think I'm not trying to say I have him, you know.
Mm.
When I worked on the Woody Allen film that I did with Sean Penn, Woody had written in the script what we call talking head interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And he had real people doing a very brief talk about their fictional lead character as if it was real.
Right.
So when I was redoing the thing, I said that would be a helpful way for me to work out the time frame of the Vienna project. So I wrote in fictional characters, and then when the producer read it, he said, no, we can put real people in there. So the first cameo was hopefully Wolfgang Puck. The second cameo is hopefully the Austrian Oscar-winning director Michael Haneke.
Mm.
The third possible cameo is Christopher Waltz, and the fourth is Arnold Schwarzenegger. They're all Austrians,
right?
And I don't know if you've seen any of the videos that recently Arnold Schwarzenegger's been doing, but he seems to be having a lot of fun poking fun of himself,
right?
And that's exactly what our little monologue is.
Well, hey, get him on the phone, reach out, get him on there. Because when you started talking about Vienna and Austria, he's immediately who I thought of, you know.
Yeah. And Wolfgang is friends with a lot of them. So so our connection is we're hoping that Wolfgang Puck will not only say yes, but he'll make a few phone calls and get these others to say yes. And we're going to pay them. They're all in the union, but we can't pay, you know, millions of dollars, but we've budgeted a small amount for their cameos.
Sure.
And what's interesting, the way it's designed, you know, apparently Schwarzenegger has rigged up his house in his kitchen and his office where he shoots really quality video. So it's like, yeah, he could shoot it right there. We don't need to fly out anywhere or fly in. All four of these talking heads could be done on a good quality cell phone in a quiet room.
Right, right. And just
and
do
we'll
it that
work
way.
With them. Yeah, and we'll work with them. You know, there's a monologue in there, and if they want to work a little bit on the monologue, it's okay. Well, let's work on it because there's certain key story points we can't lose, but otherwise, you know, and we'll see if that can happen. And the two lead actors we're looking at, again, I don't want to drop names because it's not fair, but we are approaching one lead actor now who in his later years is complaining he doesn't get offered lead roles anymore. And when we did a little research, we found that, yeah, this person's grandparents left Austria in the turn of the century. So if we can pull this cast together, I think we've got a winning film that should earn its money back at least.
Yeah. Now you're going to make me go and try and figure out who it is. You're going to make me, the curiosity is going to kill this cat.
Well, it's, you know, I hate to say names because until, you know, like before we just mentioned, because nothing's a done deal. I don't want anybody thinking, oh, I've got Arnold Schwarzenegger, because that's not the truth. It's just somebody we hope we can reach and work in, you know,
right,
work with.
Right. Well, that would be great. That would be great if he could. That would be great. Well, you've got to let me know where and when everybody can see these so we can let people know. And I'm looking forward to both. I'm looking forward to both, definitely. And, you know, you keep in touch with me on Facebook or email or whatever and let me know because I would love to let everybody know that it's out there.
We've got websites, megaballsmovie.com and the Vienna Project. It's comebackinvienna.com. We're all over social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, as Auroloro, which is the company name. And as we make progress, it'll be on there. Recently, I just got on the Clubhouse, and I'm learning how to use that and network. And, you know, we're building a good team. The Megaballs team we have is really great. We've got pretty much everybody on board except for the actors. We've got a phenomenal DP from New York, and we've got a costumer. I mean, the list goes on. And in Vienna, we're building all that.
Well, again, if you need a someone to play a addicted lottery player, that's me. So anyway, and I and my work, my price is really low. I work for free, so I'm only kidding, Mark. But yes, oh my goodness. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to both of them. I got to say I'm a little biased for the Mega Balls, though. You know, I got to see that.
Well,
that sounds hysterical.
They're,
with Vinny in there, too.
You know, they're very different stories. Mega Balls, for those listening, it's a comedy about computer geeks, the lottery, and the mob.
Right.
And then there's like this little twist at the ending that when we did the reading, I polled the audience, how many you think A happened or B happened? And each time half the audience raised their hand, and all I said was, well, one of you is wrong. And the Vienna Project is a romantic comedy. It's about an older couple. They were a husband and wife at one point, and they were also successful actors with films together, popular romantic comedies. But then the marriage broke up. The husband died, and now it's years later. The lead female has come to Vienna for a tribute to her career, hoping to stage her comeback, when suddenly her dead ex-husband, ex-co-star, shows up. He's not dead, and he's trying to reunite them on screen and off. And it's about the problems all that causes. And again, it comes to an ending where you think it's one ending, and it turns out to be something very different.
Nice. I can't wait. Now, Mark, if anybody wanted to know more about you, I guess, Auroloro, go to Auroloro.
There's also a markbaron.com, and I'm on Facebook as Mark Baron, and Auroloro.com. Yes, we're all over. Everything's covered.
And if anybody wants to become part of this, invest in these movies, just reach out to Auroloro or Mark as well. So,
right, we have all the legal work in place, so it's all done legitimate.
Excellent, excellent. And I'm looking forward to it. And folks, look out for Comeback in Vienna and Mega Balls. And we're going to let you know here because Mark's going to tell me when it's coming out, and I'm going to let you know when. Hey, why don't you come back, Mark, and let us know when it's actually going to be released so we can let people know.
Sounds like a plan.
Me too. I think so. I do. Well, it was great talking to you finally. My God, I am so sorry. It's been months. And you know what happens? I think I told you, you and I were conversing, and then I get messages, and then each message goes down, 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 and then I don't see them again until the person reaches out to me. So that's why I kept trying to say, oh, God, I got to get Mark on. And I finally said, I'm getting Mark on. He's got to get on here. So I'm so glad we finally made this happen. And good luck. It sounds great. I can't wait to see both. And it was great talking to you.
Well, it was great talking to you. And thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, no. Thank you, Mark. And you take care. Enjoy the rest of your evening. And we'll stay in touch, please.
We will.
All right, everybody. Mark Barron. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you.
Applause Radio Show. Mark Barron, thank you. Take care, Mark. I'll talk soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Mark Barron, everybody. Go check it out. It's coming out soon. I'm telling you, the Mega Ball sounds funny. It's got Vinny Pastore. It's got to be funny. It's got to be funny. And both sound funny. But the Mega Balls, like I said, is right up my alley. It's anybody out there knows me knows I love the lottery. I've got no vices in my life but the lottery, and maybe I don't know. I just enjoy it. I mean, I'm not addicted. Don't get me wrong. I'm kidding. I'm joking. But anyway, it sounds like a great movie, and I can't wait to see it. And I'm so glad Mark and I finally got to touch base. So I hope everybody had a great weekend. It was gorgeous weather. Didn't do much over here, but, you know, it was gorgeous weather. And so we got, what we got coming up? Oh, on Wednesday, we got Victor Miglichon. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. I might be butchering that. Victor is a producer, I believe, and the creator of American Family, I think, on Netflix. I don't have the information. I'm sorry, guys. I've been out of the loop for 2 weeks, so I have to get myself into the email. And we've got some great guests coming up. And also last night was a lot of fun with Jamie. I always want to say Janie. I don't know why. So Janie got a gun. I don't know. It's in my head. Jamie Leonhart. And we played a couple of songs from her new album that'll be out in November, we're hoping, she said. We're hoping for November. And it's Illusion of Blue. And if you like jazz and a little mix of blues, you're going to dig it. So anyway, have a good night. I need to pick me up here. It's what, 8:57. I got things to do, so I got to wake myself up. So with that, I'm going to play to close out Vehicle, because I love that. It gets me going. It's got everything in it. It's got rock. It's got blues. It's got jazz. It's got, oh man, it's got the horns. It's everything. Vehicle, I DeMarch, Jim Peterick. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Mark Barron, thank you for joining me. Good luck. We can't wait to see your new movies, Come Back in Vienna and Mega Balls. Have a good night, everybody. Thanks for listening. You could have been doing anything and you hung out with me. Thank you so much. That's really cool. Appreciate it. Take care. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Hey, well, I'm the friendly stranger in the black sedan. Won't you hop inside my car? Got pictures, got candy. I'm a lovable man. Take it to the nearest star. I'm your vehicle, baby. I'll take it.
God in heaven, you know I love you.